It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Quarantine fatigue. Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. With spring in the air now, people are itching to get outside. Correspondent Sam Brock begins our coverage.
The idea that people are coming out to parks and beaches and other public spaces all over the country because they've been cooped up in their house for so long, they've decided, I've had enough. This isn't just an idea or a concept. Researchers at the University of Maryland are using real statistical data from your cell phones to track who's going out and when.
Five more states join Georgia today in lifting lockdown orders from coronavirus. And by the end of the week, 10 others will begin phased-in plans, including next door, Ohio. White House advisor Jared Kushner.
I think that we're learning how to live with this in a much better way, which will enable us to start going back to work in a phased and responsible approach.
The nation's governor is going to talk about their comeback plan with President Trump in a conference call at the White House today. Colorado Governor Jared Polis.
What matters a lot more than the date that the stay-at-home ends is what we do going forward. It doesn't accomplish anything if it's not replaced with practices that are sustainable for the weeks and months that it's likely to remain with us.
Dr. Deborah Birx with the President's Coronavirus Task Force tells NBC News that even when states do open up, social distancing will not go away.
Social distancing will be with us through the summer to really ensure that we protect one another as we move through these phases.
The Trump administration appears to be pivoting from the medical to the economic as it searches for a COVID-19 comeback plan. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin.
I think as we begin to reopen the economy in May and June, you're going to see the economy really bounce back in July, August, September.
And that's a good thing because right now coronavirus has cost one out of every six Americans their job.
The unemployment in the U.S. is probably around 17% right now. At the peak of the Great Recession in terms of unemployment, it topped out at 10%.
That's economist Tom Tunstall telling Family Life News.
You know, that was over a period of a couple of years. And, you know, this is within, what, 3 months, 2 months?
More than 26 million Americans have filed for unemployment insurance. Where's the beef? Tyson Foods warning that the food supply chain is breaking. The meat processor took out a full-page ad yesterday in the New York Times, forecasting a shortage of the company's pork, beef, and chicken products as plants close due to the virus. Several of the company's plants have shut down. Employees have tested positive. Tyson Foods says it's going to pay out $60 million in thank you bonuses to its workers. We're learning more today about what coronavirus actually does to the human body.
This virus is causing blood clots, and we classically see blood clots in more elderly individuals. Clots in the leg, that can go to the lung. Clots in the heart, that can go to the brain. But we're seeing it in 30, 40, and 50-year-olds, and many times in people that are not that symptomatic with the virus. So this is new.
That's CBS News medical correspondent Dr. David Akis. It appears that Disney parks will be closed a lot longer than initially thought. Sorry, kids. The LA Times reporting today that Disney will wait until January 1st of next year to reopen its North American theme parks. A group of Dutch students got stuck in the Caribbean because of coronavirus, so they tried something unconventional, a 4,000-mile sailing trip. To get back home, listen to this from correspondent Vicky Barker.
Home at last. These Dutch teenagers were halfway through their six-week sales study program when all the airlines home were closed by the coronavirus. The kids found the five-week journey tense at times.
There are a lot of friction and sometimes fights, but it's very quickly solved because you are in such a small space, so you have to solve it quickly.
Their teachers kept them up to date on their classes. The most important lesson?
What most children learned here on board, that plans change all the time.
Back on dry land with a lifetime of memories.
What a great story. Vicky Barker reporting elsewhere from overseas. Where in the world is Kim Jong-un? There are rumors today that the diminutive dictator of North Korea may be dead. He hasn't been seen in public in more than 2 weeks. Here's reporter Dan Hoffman.
Something behind the scenes is going on, and I can guarantee you that China and Russia, not just the United States, is tracking these developments closely, given the fact that North Korea has such an extraordinarily expansive arsenal of weapons of mass destruction. Any sort of instability in that hermit kingdom regime would be cause for concern in the region and beyond.
That's Dan Hoffman reporting from Seoul, South Korea. The 36-year-old Kim, a chain smoker who is morbidly obese. Conservatives argue there is a double standard in the mainstream media when it comes to its coverage of sexual abuse accusations against public officials. This after a woman's claims about Joe Biden resurfaced over the weekend. Ex-Biden staffer Tara Reid says the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee assaulted her decades ago.
He had me against the wall, and then he pulled back and said, come on, man, I heard you liked me.
Reid says she was attacked by Biden in 1993 while she worked for him on Capitol Hill. Joe Conches, a media reporter for The Hill.
The Me Too movement has been weaponized, all right? It is now being used by some people to take political opponents out, while others, including media, is using it in other ways not to cover the same allegations based on whoever the accused is and the party they represent, and that is a shame to the women who are the true victims out there.
Biden denies these latest abuse accusations. By the way, CNN, ABC, NBC, and CBS have all made no on-the-air mention of this story. Still to come on the Noon Report, Cuomo getting high marks, travel in the coronavirus era, and how parents of special needs kids are coping.
Well, good afternoon to all. Skies have begun to clear in western parts of our region. That clearing comes east later today and tonight. I'll be back with forecast details coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Checking the headlines from New York and Pennsylvania today. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo getting a record high approval rating for his response to COVID-19. The latest Siena College poll out today puts his favorability rating at 77%. That matches an all-time high for the governor set back in 2011. More than half of all New Yorkers say they know someone who's tested positive for coronavirus, and nearly a third say they know someone who has died from coronavirus. Well, the governor says the reopening of New York will be done in 2-week increments and only if hospitalization rates are down for 14 straight days.
As long as we act prudently going forward, the worst should be over.
He says manufacturing and construction sectors will be the first to come back, but it will not be business as usual.
You can't go back to where you were. We have to go back in light of the circumstances that have developed. All that progress we made by flattening that curve, we could lose that in a matter of days if we're not careful.
Sunday marked the first day in the entire month that the number of daily coronavirus fatalities in New York fell below 400. Penn State cutting jobs and spending because of the virus. The state's largest school will reduce spending by 3% and cut in half the pay of some 2,000 employees starting next week. The sprawling university enrolls nearly 82,000 students at 19 campuses across Pennsylvania. Well, coronavirus has taken a toll on the travel industry. No doubt about it. At the Buffalo Niagara International Airport, business has ground to a halt. Spokeswoman Helen Teteros.
Travel has significantly declined. And when I say significantly, we're talking about 80%. So I don't know if you've had the opportunity to go to the airport, but it's dramatically quiet.
Travel agent Chuck Teal says summer vacation plans are up in the air for a lot of people.
A lot of what we're doing now, I would say probably 90% of what I'm doing now, is existing clients just either canceling in some degree, but for the most part, rebooking their plans for later this summer, this fall, quite a bit for next spring.
He recommends you get travel insurance if you can to protect yourself from what looks to be a very uncertain summer travel season. With outdoor planting season in full bloom now, many mom-and-pop shops that supply seeds and flowers are buckling under Governor Wolf's shutdown orders. That story from Family Life's Terry Diener.
Garden centers that remain closed under Wolf's order for non-life-sustaining businesses to close say they're losing out during a critical 8-week stretch before June. Home gardeners are planting outdoors in earnest for the summer growing season, and relaxed shutdown order could be weeks away for most parts of the state. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. By the way, Pennsylvania begins easing business closures and stay-at-home orders May the 8th. In certain counties, at least, that's the plan. New York leaders concerned about a spike in domestic violence cases amid stay-at-home orders. Ann Domingos works with abuse survivors in the Southern Tier. She says when people are cooped up in their homes, sometimes bad things happen.
It's feeling a very isolative time for individuals and those that already struggle with that. It's been a real challenge.
Statewide, there's been a 30% increase in domestic violence cases during the month of April. Police think that's because victims are stuck at home with their abusers. Geisinger Health bringing back elective and non-emergency surgeries. The hospital's been losing about $100 million a month because of this pandemic. Geisinger serves over 3 million patients in 45 counties in central, north central, and northeastern Pennsylvania. Well, no place outside of New York City has more cases of coronavirus than does the Buffalo area. Here's Family Life's Dee Haley.
While hospitalizations are down, Erie County Executive Mark Poloncar has announced 139 new cases of COVID-19 yesterday. The total is now 2,996 positive cases and 207 coronavirus deaths in the county. 13,409 people have now been tested. On Friday, Poloncar said that the Western New York community will continue to see an increase in cases, mainly because testing is now more readily available. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
All right, Dee, thank you. A box truck hauled out of a lake in Lackawanna County, PA, may have been part of an ATM robbery from a decade ago. That vehicle first detected on sonar by a fisherman at a state park. It was recovered from 18 feet of water, and the investigation, as they say, is ongoing. Sports next. We call it the two-minute drill. Here's Sonny Delphiette.
Yes, sir. The first ever virtual NFL draft turned out to be the most watched in the event's history. The league announced it averaged a record 8.4 million viewers over the three-day selection process. The average audience marked a 35% increase over the draft's previous high of 6.2 million viewers set just last year, according to the NFL and Nielsen. Each day, the draft set a new viewership record as well, with Thursday's first round drawing an average of 15.6 million viewers. The league also said its online telethon for coronavirus relief averaged 5.4 million viewers and raised over $100 million. Georgia linebacker Tay Crowder is this year's Mr. Irrelevant. That honor goes to the absolute final pick of the NFL draft each year. The New York Football Giants just happened to have that pick Saturday, the 255th overall selection. The New Orleans Saints and quarterback Jameis Winston reportedly nearing a one-year contract. Winston was not re-signed by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after they brought in Tom Brady, ending the 2015 number one overall pick's five-year run with Tampa Bay that included zero trips to the playoffs. Winston led the NFL last season with 5,109 passing yards and was second with 33 touchdown passes. But he also topped the league with 30 interceptions, the first quarterback ever to do that in the NFL. Winston expected to compete with Taysom Hill to be Drew Brees' backup. The Saints announced that Hill, a restricted free agent, signed a new two-year contract through 2021, making him the highest paid backup in the NFL. And baseball news, free agent outfielder Yasiel Puig is close to reaching an agreement with the San Francisco Giants. The report states that the deal would include a one-year option and adds that the Giants and Puig are waiting for clarification from Major League Baseball before they can make an announcement. Puig spent most of his seven-year career playing for the Giants' biggest rival, the Dodgers. He had 24 homers and 84 RBIs in 149 games with the Reds and Indians last season. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphiette.
Thank you kindly, Sonny. Still to come on this Monday edition of the Noon Report, Issues in Education with Dr. Ralph Kerr, social distancing through the summer, and a new week brings new plans for a new normal in New York.
Being at home full-time with kids during this pandemic can be a challenge. For parents of children with special needs, those challenges can be multiplied. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. The COVID-19 pandemic has given rise to all kinds of I'm trapped at home with my kids and I'm going out of my mind memes, and more than a few articles that would fall into the first world problems category. Now, I'm not saying there aren't challenges, of course, as one of the more helpful memes puts it, with a wistful Forrest Gump looking into space. And just like that, no one ever asks what stay-at-home moms do all day ever again. One group of parents we should especially keep in mind during this time is the group least likely to constantly remind us what they're going through. If for no other reason, they're simply too busy. And I'm talking of parents of children with autism or other developmental disabilities. With most, if not all, special education programs and services suspended indefinitely, these parents are even busier than usual. Many of us haven't fully thought through what makes special education, well, so special. The goal of special education is to help individuals with special needs achieve a higher level of personal self-sufficiency and success. While that includes certain academic subjects, those with developmental disorders need to learn essential skills that other children can often learn simply by imitating parents or peers, including basic social skills. Consider something as simple as looking at someone when they speak to you. There's a kind of self-awareness and an ability to acknowledge another's presence that's taken for granted in this basic social habit. A colleague of mine has a son with autism, and he marvels at how his son went from ignoring other people to greeting them and now even sticking out his hand expecting a handshake. Another incredibly helpful skill to learn is how to cope with sensory overload. This defining aspect of autism is why so many children on the spectrum tend to be anxious or retreat into distinct behaviors, such as rocking or flicking their fingers. Simply put, they're just trying to turn the volume down in the world. Though parents are, of course, essential to helping their children learn these skills, it often takes special training to learn how to teach these skills to those with unique challenges. So many parents rely on the sorts of programs that have not been available since the start of this pandemic. Finally, there's the fact that for many parents, the time their kids spend at school offers a necessary respite from an extraordinarily difficult and stressful life. Though they love and serve their children, during this time, they've lost some necessary downtime. So what can we do to help? First, of course, and most importantly, we should pray for these families. Keep in mind that not only are they carrying a heavy load, but right now they're offering a powerful and unique witness about the sanctity and dignity of all human life. All over the world, people with Down syndrome are targeted in utero for elimination through selective abortion. And of course, if a genetic test were ever developed to determine autism or any number of other conditions, those children would also be under increased threat as well. Second, we should ask the parents we know in these situations how we can help them. Something as simple as running an errand or grocery shopping can make a huge difference, since getting out of the house is far more difficult for them than it is for the rest of us. And don't underestimate the power of simply calling and asking a parent how they're doing. One of the most challenging parts of being the parent of a child with special needs, as I am told, is how very isolating it often feels. I have it from a few very good sources that they would appreciate you just letting them know that you're thinking about them. As I said, most of these parents aren't going to spend the limited time and energy they have to call and complain to us about what they're going through. So it's up to us to let them and others know that their tremendous and heroic efforts aren't going unnoticed. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Let's take it outside next. Get that work week forecast, Kevin.
Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The call for this afternoon, remaining gray, central New York and eastern Pennsylvania with any rain or drizzle ending. Farther west, overcast skies breaking, and they'll turn out partly sunny in far western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. High today, 40s and low 50s. Becoming partly cloudy area-wide tonight, but then turning cloudy near Lake Erie. A couple of showers late tonight and tomorrow morning in western Pennsylvania. Low tonight, 30s, the high tomorrow, with some sunshine elsewhere in the 50s. On Wednesday, cloudy, breezy, with showers and rumbles arriving. High temps, mid-50s to the mid-60s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price, and here's what's going on this Monday afternoon, the 27th of April. The health and the whereabouts of North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un remains an international mystery today. There are multiple media outlets reporting that he may be dead. South Korea says there's no evidence of that. Foreign experts already preparing for the possibility that Kim's sister could be the next to rule that hermit kingdom.
There's a lot of discussion about whether or not the old guard in North Korea would accept the ascension of a female. But she is a blood relative, And the Kim family, the sort of monarchic feudal line of the Kim family, is a central part of North Korean mythology. So she's the obvious choice, barring the gender issue.
South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham said over the weekend he would be surprised if Kim was not dead. The White House, though, will not speculate. Spokeswoman Kellyanne Conway.
The president will make any announcement about a head of state. I will just tell you that all of us will get our credible information offline, not online.
Chairman Kim's not been seen in public in more than 2 weeks. Stay-at-home orders being lifted in 5 more states today as the COVID-19 caseload nationwide nears the 1 million mark. Dr. Deborah Birx chairs the president's coronavirus task force. She says social distancing will be with us through the summer, adding that governors in states where lockdowns are being lifted are being careful.
They understand the risk, and they talk about this not as turning on a light switch, but slowly turning up the dimmer.
But in Santa Barbara, California, the proverbial dimmer appears to be turned up all the way.
There are a lot of people on the beach.
It's hard. You got to police yourself.
The Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Department patrolled the beaches
just to educate people who might not be abiding by the 6 feet social distancing requirement.
While many people come to the beach for a quick walk, many are staying on the sand for an extended period of time.
Being out here for a little bit versus rebelling and setting up camp and being here all day, that's a fine line.
Some think that the beaches should remain open with certain restrictions.
People shouldn't be laying down on the beach.
Others believe
I would probably vote to close the beach, which is ironic considering I'm here right now.
Blake Devine reporting from Southern California, where thousands flocked to the beaches over the weekend. Governor Cuomo says New York will reopen in stages and phases, but no sooner than mid-May. Liz Warner has the story.
The governor saying that New York will likely open in regions and in phases, which would also naturally impact schools.
Schools are necessary for a large-scale business reopening, so you couldn't really get to a maximum phase two without opening schools.
The governor also added that New York's reopening will be a multi-stage process with at least 2 week gaps in between phases.
New York saw fewer than 400 people die from coronavirus on Sunday, the first time that's happened during the entire month of April. The White House bracing for some painful economic statistics.
The next couple of months are going to look terrible.
White House advisor Kevin Hassett.
You're going to see numbers that are as bad as anything that we've ever seen. I think the unemployment rate is going to jump to a level probably around 16% or even higher in the next jobs report.
And what about gross domestic product, a common indicator used to track the health of a nation's economy?
I think GDP growth in the second quarter is going to be negative, big number. Wall Street estimates are negative 20, negative 30% at an annual rate.
The next jobs report is due out on May 8th.
Shelley Adler reporting the nation's airline industry charting a course for survival.
United expects to fly fewer people during all of May than it did in a single day in May 2019. Pilot Jim Crail.
What is flying like these days?
I would describe it as empty.
The industry is going to get smaller for the foreseeable future.
Jamie Baker tracks the airlines for JP Morgan Chase.
But if nothing changes between now and September 30th, we fear that October 1st is going to be one of the darkest days for airline labor, really, since the dawn of commercial flight.
That's aviation consultant Chris Van Cleve, a pastor in Louisiana under house arrest, defied a judge's order and led a Sunday service for about 100 people at his home. Pastor Tony Spell of the Life Tabernacle Church in Baton Rouge was live-streamed yesterday walking amongst his parishioners. The worshipers weren't wearing masks, and they were not practicing social distancing. How do you talk to your kids about this pandemic?
Sometimes the unknown is scarier for kids than the known. And I think there can be a tendency, especially with younger children, to try to protect them from information.
That's Dr. Valerie Crabtree with St. Jude Children's Hospital in Memphis. She says kids are just as impacted by this as adults, and in some cases, even more so.
There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of unpredictability. Their normal routines are disrupted. They can't have the same social activities they typically have. They may not be going to school.
And this is distressing to a lot of kids. Crabtree says her best advice is be honest, mom and dad.
It can be more beneficial to have open and honest dialogue with children so that they know what we're worried about as parents, and they can pick up on parents' worry.
That's Dr. Valerie Crabtree with St. Jude Children's Hospital in Memphis. This is the Noon Report on Family Life. And welcome back to another edition of Issues in Education. Mondays during the Noon Report, we spotlight the issues that matter most to our public schooling families with the good doctor, Ralph Kerr, at the Teaching and Learning Institute. Ralph, the forced homeschooling continues, and in Pennsylvania, it's going to continue for the rest of the school year, all K through 12 schools closed for the rest of the academic year. In New York, the governor going to reassess that mid-May. But in the meantime, it's online learning. That is the new normal. Wonder if you could weigh in on some of the biggest obstacles that not just students, but teachers, schools, even parents are facing when it comes to online learning.
Well, let me just start with something that the governor said in his press conference the end of last week, which I thought was really funny. He said that, this is Governor Cuomo now, said that, you know, to reopen schools is a very, very big undertaking, and that he thinks that it needs to be done. Business and schools need to open at the same time. And then he went on to say that parents would say things like, you want me to go back to work? Hallelujah. Oh, wait a minute. What do I do with my kids?
Yeah, I heard that quote too. It makes you wonder if he is leaning towards opening schools. What are you thinking?
I don't see how he can, really. For one thing, to try to do the social distancing, and they're talking about, even in the fall, having students go 2 or 3 days a week or just in the mornings in order to accommodate that social distancing.
Yeah.
But I do know that from a parent's standpoint, many of them now are saying, look, just make a decision. Tell us one way or the other. And I think that's part of his strategy, that he really doesn't want to do that, because to say to parents that are already frustrated, you know, you're going to have another 2 months of this. He may be concerned it'll be enough to put some of them right over the edge.
Well, a lot of district superintendents say this is it. If he pauses it again after May 15th, then there is no going back this year. I think they've already resigned to that fact. And then finally, Ralph, I want to talk about the class of 2020. It's so tragic. The kids, they're going to be calling these guys the COVID kids, and that asterisk that will follow them around the rest of their life, whether they want to or not. Not having graduation, whether at high school or the college level, this is a unique situation. We are living history. These kids, unfortunately, are collateral damage in this. But, you know, life goes on. Some of them will be enrolling in college in the fall, but there are others that are saying, what do I do now? Or that college graduate who now wonders, what do I do? What is your recommendation to the class of 2020, whether it be high school or college, and how they go forth from this?
Well, just before I answer that, let me say that in addition to missing their graduation, how about the junior high students who are going to miss that opportunity for their first dance?
Yeah.
And will, you know, normally be standing against the wall wondering who those people are on the other side of the room.
Yeah.
They're going to miss that experience as well.
That's an awkward rite of passage for all of us. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, indeed.
But I can put the other question in terms of high school seniors and college seniors, I think, pretty succinctly, and that is to say, we need to encourage everybody to get back into a routine. And I think that high school seniors, if they were planning to go to college, they need to continue to pursue that. I know colleges are doing virtual tours and virtual enrollments kinds of things. And they need to move forward with that and hope for the best. And in terms of college graduates, again, they've been in college, hopefully, to either prepare themselves for graduate school or prepare themselves for the job market. And they need to just move forward with that.
Yeah.
We are going to come back from this. And I think particularly young people need to pursue their careers or their schooling that they've been preparing for, and just continue in that routine, not get into the routine of just hanging out, doing nothing. That's not a good place for us, any of us, to be.
All right. And that will be the last word this week, but if you have questions about public education in the midst of this national emergency, Ralph, you have a wonderful website where folks can check you out. What is that, sir?
Thank you, Bob. They can simply go to yrun.org, yrun.org.
Issues in Education comes your way Mondays during the Noon Report, online anytime, fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. The latest storm system to bring our area rain, high elevation snow, is moving east and away now. Skies have begun to clear in parts of western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. That clearing reaches the rest of our region, if not late today, then tonight. High pressure then arrives with a nicer day for many of us tomorrow before a potent storm system comes in later in the week with hefty showers and some rumbles. The call for this afternoon remaining gray, central New York and eastern Pennsylvania with any rain or drizzle ending. Farther west, overcast skies breaking, and they'll turn out partly sunny in far western New York and northwest Pennsylvania. High today, 40s and low 50s. Becoming partly cloudy area-wide tonight, but then turning cloudy near Lake Erie. Couple of showers late tonight and tomorrow morning in western Pennsylvania. Low tonight, 30s. The high tomorrow, with some sunshine elsewhere in the 50s. On Wednesday, cloudy, breezy, with showers and rumbles arriving. High temps, mid-50s to the mid-60s.
All right, things going to green up fast out there. Thank you, Kevin. And finally at noon, a four-year-old Staten Island boy starts his day every morning now during this coronavirus pandemic by leading the Pledge of Allegiance on Zoom.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, it's always a little echoey on Zoom, but you get the point. That's four-year-old CJ Tardy. Initially started this as a way to keep his school routine, but his mom says it quickly turned into something much bigger, a much larger salute. Now Tardy leads not just the pledge, but a patriotic tune every morning on Zoom. And not just for his classmates either.
My country is David, we are on the way.
That's four-year-old C.J. Tardy of Staten Island. More than 50 people join him on Zoom every day, including EMTs, doctors, nurses, politicians, and yes, C.J.'s nursery school classmates. Keep up the great work, C.J. And that's the world we live in, Monday, April 27th. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.